House Transportation Committee to order. Today is April 28th. The time is 2:15 p.m. Members present are Representative Elton, Kukesh, Sanders, and myself. Today we'll take up two pieces of legislation, SJR 25 access to Denali Wonder Lake and House Bill 210, airport duty fee concessions. Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you and members of the committee for hearing SJR 25 supporting access to Denali and Wonder Lake through a proposed railroad system. I passed out earlier a book here about the Grand Canyon. You might want to just look at that. That's just for your information. This picture here is a little more relevant to what we're speaking of. The yellow is the existing road that I'm sure all of you have been on, the school buses. The green is the proposed path of a new railway, which would lead from approximately Otter Lake and Healy, this is the city of Healy, to Wonder Lake here. This is north, this is going to Fairbanks, to the bottom is Anchorage, to orient you. I won't read the sponsor statement, but I will say that as a 40-year plus Alaskan, one of the things that has embarrassed me terribly is that when we ask people to come to Alaska and we ask them to see our natural beauty and we promise them a Mount McKinley, they come with a promise of a mountain, and what we show them is a canyon. We show them a six-hour bus ride, a school bus ride, and the chances are one of three that they'll see the most grand mountain on the North American continent. It's embarrassing for me to have people spend thousands of dollars to come to see that great mountain and be restricted in their view. The Northern Railway will bring people in an environmentally friendly way to Wonder Lake and to the best viewing place for Mount McKinley. This is a long involved process that people have spent a lot of time and energy on, but the basics, the assumptions on which their plan is built are solid, and I would encourage this legislature to encourage them to continue on. As part of your packet, you'll see about 16 different organizations that have endorsed this concept as a northern viewpoint and a northern access to Mount McKinley. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions of the committee, but I certainly encourage your full support of Joint Resolution 25 and northern access to Wonder Lake and Denali. Thank you.
Are there any questions from committee members for the sponsor? If not, thank you. Do we have any, do we have someone in Fairbanks that would like to talk?
Yes. Fairbanks is online, but no one has indicated they want to.
Yes, there's someone here.
Is anyone on teleconference that would like to testify on it? Senate Joint Resolution 25.
Yes, this is Joe Fields in Fairbanks. Can you hear me?
Is anyone here in the audience in Juneau? There's a gentleman back there. Senator?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bill Perhatch. I'm a resident of the community adjacent to Denali Park. McKinley Village is the community I lived in, and it's been my home since 1977. I've worked in the tourism industry since 1977. About 14 years of that, I worked with the package cruise ship industry, which I think would plug into this project. And for about the last 6 years, I've been working with what is referred to as the ecotourism market. I'm against the railroad, have been against the railroad from the start. It's been talked of now for about 8 years. And what I'd like to do, if I could quickly, is go through the resolution and just point out a few inconsistencies in the resolution. The first one I come to is the first whereas on line six, where we are going to have, sure, excuse me, that's all right. have a chance to encounter wildlife. One of the problems, I shouldn't say it's a problem, it's just a fact, of the Stampede Trail. There's not much watchable wildlife. I'm not saying there's no critters there, but the unique thing about Denali Park, the original wilderness designated portion of the park, is it traverses a series of valleys. That road, it was not put in there by accident. And from the very start, it was intended to be a tourism draw. And the wildlife that's in there, it's truly a unique situation here in Alaska. I've worked with Princess Tour. They tried to develop at one point a wildlife tour up on the Dalton Highway. It was a fine tour in terms of its cultural history, but in terms of wildlife, it's too spread out. They're just not available. And Princess Tours has been forced to fall back and rely on Denali Park in that wilderness area. Trains, we've looked at trains over the years. Light rail in the park corridor where there is wildlife doesn't lend itself to watching wildlife because you can't stop it. You can't work a bear the way these buses work a bear, for instance, or any other wildlife. You just cannot stop a train. The train that's being discussed going into Wonder Lake on the north side is a relatively high-speed train, 40, 45 mile an hour. They're moving people. And the whole idea with the railroad on the north side is to get people into an area that has just an incredible view of the mountain and let them see the mountain. A lot of people come to the park to see the mountain. A lot of people come to Alaska. That's the number one thing on their list. A lot of people who come to Denali Park come to see wildlife. It's pretty much accepted, those of us who know a lot about the park, that the mountain is more visible on the south side of the range. That's what's been pushing this south side development. The weather down there is more favorable to that. And when they first started talking about additions to the south side, it was with the intention that if there was commercial development in Denali National Park, that it would happen on the south side. That would be the place for winter recreation, for instance, because the climate's a little bit more mellow on the south side. I don't want to deal with guests in 30 to 50 below weather. Pretty high maintenance stuff. Coming down to line 12 on page 1, lack of facilities and wilderness experience. This is a problem we've had. We have a wilderness designated portion of the park that does not have many facilities. But then, you know, if you're trying to give people a wilderness experience, you know, you can't really turn it into a Yosemite Valley with supermarkets and paved roads. There is, I think, a market for that. And once again, this is the idea for the south side development. That's why the plan has been moving ahead so fast of late. On the second page, well, I've already addressed the splendid viewing opportunities, and I believe the senator mentioned that typically it's the mountain is visible in the summertime on the north side one day out of three. If you get out to the Wonder Lake area, when it's visible, it's beautiful, but for the most part, it's a lot more visible from the area of the Petersville Road, from the Tuckasitna Glacier. And I've already addressed winter activities, my sense on it, working now with ecotourism people on the ground rather than just transporting them in a vehicle. Those 30 to 50 below temperatures that we have in the interior in January and February, not an easy time to operate in that type of a business. On line 5 and 6, we're talking about previously used by the mining industry. The Stampede Trail was used by Earl Pilgrim, who did have a mine in Stampede, on Stampede Creek, mined for many, many years. He only used that route in the wintertime. He used to skid ore out on sleds in the wintertime. The state put a road in there in the summer, in the mid-60s. Earl Pilgrim said the ground won't hold it. The ground won't take this kind of use. And he never tried to transport in the summertime. He continued to fly his ore out and occasionally in the wintertime bring it out on sleds using a D8 Cat or whatever, but he did not try to use this road in the summertime. And as I understand it, the road was never used by him in the summertime or anyone else. It has, at this point, pretty much gone back to nature. We call it Moose Alley. There are areas in there in the wintertime where you will find a lot of moose because it's so much willow in there. The final point I'd like to make, and that is the scope of the project. We're talking about here a project that depends on who you talk to, but somewhere between $280 and $350 million. And the plan as it's proposed, it has two 300-room hotels, one on the Healy end and one on the Wonder Lake end. The numbers don't work. You cannot support, even at $100 a ticket, you will not have enough business on this railroad for the debt service, let alone to make a profit. What it really will require is a large development out there in the Kantishna. This is not being addressed because it would infuriate the environmental community. But at some point down the line, what we're looking at is the sort of development that you now have on the east end. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with the commercial zone that we have on the east end of Denali Park, but the state is trying to address problems that have been created there because of a lack of planning. That's about all I have to say.
Any questions? Representative Elton?
Thanks. Bill, I guess I'm thinking of this in terms of what happens at Skagway with the White Pass and Yukon Railroad, where the visitor experience isn't necessarily quantified by counting the number of animals that you see, but just by seeing some spectacular country they might not otherwise be able to see. And then also, I'm trying to put it in the context of what's happening on the parks, on the road into the park and into Wonder Lake now, where, I mean, I think it would be easy to say that you're degrading the experience of anybody that tries to use the bus system and tries to get any distance into the park at all. And so that's kind of the context I've been thinking of it in. And then I guess I'd like to have you expand a little bit, too, on, I mean, who makes the decision on what's financially viable and what's not. I mean, I didn't see any numbers in here, and so your mention of numbers was the first mention of numbers. And whether I'd be interested in whether those numbers include the cost of right-of-way?
Well, in terms of right-of-way, what the Kantishna group has made a point of the fact that they are not asking for any funds from the state or the federal government. But what they are asking for is a right-of-way. And they're also asking for the building site within the old park at the ranger station at Wonder Lake. They're willing to operate on a concession, but they're not buying the right of way. They're asking for that to be given to them.
So you're, when you say up to $350 million, I think that's the figure you used. You're not adding in cost of right of way at all. You're just talking about construction of the rail line.
Well, that is construction of the rail line, rolling stock. A big portion of that is the hotels and the infrastructure to maintain the products. You know, if you go ahead and you build something on the south side of Denali, you have access to the road system. You have much better access to power. You have access to an existing railroad, which is not being used to its maximum. I mean, why aren't people using that railroad more? What's going on? There's certainly a scenic opportunity with our existing railroad. The only major increase that we've had over the last decade has been through the package tour industry and their private rail cars. And their sense is that given their market, they are not going to be able to supply the 500,000 additional guests that this railroad is depending on. It's not coming out of their market. They're not going to bring these people. One of the points that we have to stress here, with the packaged cruise ship industry. The product that they're selling isn't Denali Park or Juno. They're selling time on a ship. And it's got a fixed price. Now, when you go ahead and you start adding additional nights to that package tour, you suddenly become non-competitive. If we were coming out to Wonder Lake and spending the night at Wonder Lake, Denali Park becomes a two-night stay for the package tour industry. Currently, it's a one-night stay. They're there for less than 24 hours. So they're not interested in being forced to market a two-day tour at Denali Park to accommodate this railroad. What they are interested in is Southside development. They can continue to increase the number of passengers on their ships and bring them as far as the south side, totally avoid the bottleneck at Denali Park, and still give them Denali Park. This is very complicated.
Thank you. There's no, Senator Wilkin.
My staff called Fairbanks. Joe Fields was supposed to be with us this afternoon. But she said that he is there, but the speaker isn't working in the LIO in Fairbanks. So.
Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you.
Good. This is the moderator in Fairbanks, and Mr. Fields is here to testify.
Okay. Thank you.
Could I ask a question before we continue?
Yes. Senator Wilkin.
If I left the impression that the viewing from the south is better than the north, I was incorrect. The meteorological viewing days from the north side of the mountain are double the meteorological viewing days from the south. And that should be part of this packet. I've asked the Park Service to include that information in their current study, but it's far and away better viewing north of the Alaska Range than south of the Alaska Range. Let's see, I have one other question too. Could you tell me what ecotourism operator is? What does that mean? If you could, please.
I guess it's best described in terms of our clientele. Quite often, people who are coming here on ecotours have already been to Alaska once. And when they came the first time, they saw a little bit of a lot. And then they decide to come back. And now, the second time, they want to see a lot of a little. So they have a tendency to go to specific areas and then focus on them. They're also, with the, for instance, the package tour industry, those folks do not really have much time in any given place to go hiking, for instance, and that's really not that important to them, to a lot of them. But in ecotourism, they're more interested in things like whitewater experiences and hiking and spending some time on the ground.
I understand. Thank you. One last question. Would it be your opinion that there's the ability to develop not only the south side glacier development that's being considered along with the northern access? Could we not do both?
Could we not do both? Well, to be fair, to be candid, yes, we probably could. I guess where I'm coming from is, from my perspective, if you forgive me, Denali Park isn't just a way to make a living to me. And to the extent that it is a way for me to make a living, I make my living off of natural history from the wildlife. And what I've seen over the last 20 years is a gradual erosion of the opportunity to see that wildlife. So yeah, we could continue to get more people into that wilderness designated wildlife portion of the park. But I don't know, no one knows, that it won't continue to increase that impact that I've seen over the last 20 years. And I can't, you know, I'm not a scientist, so what I'm seeing is anecdotal. But on the south side, if we go ahead and we spend the money there for recreational style development, we're still more or less leaving that wilderness designated portion of the park alone. And I have to say, it's not a very popular position to take, but maybe what we should be trying to do is tell people, excuse me, the theater is full. You want to come to Denali Park, you want to see what's there, yeah, it's certainly worth seeing. But you'll have to wait for the next show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to Fairbanks. We have a Mr. Joseph Fields.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. It was quite interesting listening to Mr. Furback testify, and especially about elements of cost on a railway system. But I'd like to say that, read off a little bit here from a prepared statement and go into some other things. I'm going to list off here the names of Mayor Gonzalez of the Denali Borough, Mayor Sampson of the Fairbanks North Star Borough, Mayor Haynes of the City of Fairbanks, Mayor Knight of the City of Indiana, Mayor Ben Cardino of the City of Seward, Mayor Maestrom of the Municipality of Anchorage, Mayor Cunningham of the City of North Pole, and Mayor Locker of Matsusitna Borough. These are municipal leaders of the Rail Belt of Alaska. And they have one thing in common. They've all signed resolutions of endorsement that were created by their borough assemblies and city councils endorsing the creation of a north side access to the park and, in specific, the Denali Railway concept. I want to get away from that a little bit, and because you have a packet in front of you, I understand, that we sent down, which lists these folks and their resolutions, and talk to you just a little bit about the cost of development. And it's not to compare the north side to the south side. We've never attempted to do that. But we have utilized engineering firms and architectural firms in the state of Alaska to determine the cost of development of the park. We find ourselves at considerable odds with the National Park Service estimates, which we feel are very unrealistic. And we see a cost of development in the area of $135 billion for the rail system and additional $60 million for the two hotels that we envision. So this brings us to about $195 million. And in terms of a market for that, we've gone out and we've looked very carefully at the history of conditions in Alaska and the rate of visitor volumes growth here in the last 10 years. And based on our projections from that, we believe we can take around 525,000 per year into the park. That's on a year-round basis, something that doesn't happen now. We draw those people from approximately a 300 million person market that is within 12 hour flight time of the state of Alaska. We have two excellent airports at each end of the rail belt. And from those airports and from that rail belt, nearly 80% of all the tourism in Alaska generates out to the remote areas. So we feel this is an enhancement in infrastructure on the rail belt that will bring a significant change to the way tourism is operated in Alaska in a significantly better way. But I'd like to address some of the comments that were made by Mr. Perhack. First of all, we've not proposed any supermarkets in Wonder Lake, and we've not proposed any development in the wilderness area of the park at all. All the route that we're following is outside of the wilderness area, and that is Wonder Lake in Kantishna. The existing road bisects the wilderness area of the park. It's a little strange to see how an impact of a rail right-of-way corridor outside the wilderness area would have a more substantial effect on the wilderness area than one that divides it. With regard to the view from the south side and the north side, there is a wonderful view at Tokasitna, and that's the area that they proposed to build the south side plan to. It should be noted that in 1986, the general park plan for the park system ruled out Tokasitna as a future site of development because it did not connect to the Alaska Railroad, something they felt was significant then. It has been resurrected again, and of course now it's moving forward on somewhat of a shaky foundation. As for cost of that plan, which should be in the comparison between the two, it is proposed as publicly funded development, and the stretch from 19 miles to 41 miles, which leaves out the first 12 miles of the road, is now calculated at $38.5 million for the road. They propose a 5,000 square foot visitor center at the end of it and 50 rustic parking spots for RVs. Now, this seems like a great deal of expense, public expense, for developing of a modestly sized visitor center, which would operate at most 120 days a year. Going on The issue of ecotourism and the speed of the train and that sort of thing, our calculations are made on a 30-mile-per-hour ride out into the park, not a 45 or 50-mile-an-hour ride. The maximum speed on the rail system is 49 miles an hour, so we wouldn't expect to exceed that to begin with. But in all, it is a plan to take a larger number of people in a more comfortable and safe form of visitation into the transportation into the interior of the park to the area by Wonder Lake. Now, Wonder Lake was excluded from the wilderness area in the 1982 laws, and it has been proposed as a site of a hotel since at least 1937. There are several sites out there we've looked at, and the one that Mr. Permack mentioned is the one that we think is the best one because it shields the development best from the south end of the lake where the Wonder Lake campground is. It's also not in the viewshed of Mr. Perhack's employer's facility, which is Camp Denali. And so we feel it's kind of a good compromise in an area on good, stable ground that can be developed without a great impact. And it should be remembered that this ground is already developed. It has a road on it. It has a ranger station. There are cabins within a mile of it. It's not undeveloped wilderness, and it hasn't been in any context ever. So, I'll kind of drop my prepared text and ask you if you have any questions. Certainly glad to answer them if possible.
Is there any questions for Mr. Fields? Senator Wilkin.
Mr. Fields, would you please, for those that haven't had the pleasure of being in Healy, would you just speak for a moment about Healy being the terminus of the plan in regard to its proximity to the railroad, to the Parks Highway, and to electric power?
Well, it's an excellent site. The site that we're working on with the Alaska Railroad is located a little north of Healy, and it lends itself well to a siting for the Alaska Railroad. It's about 2 miles from the new power plant that's being built there, the Clean Coal Power Plant, so we see no real problem with getting electrical service to the site. It's about 300 feet vertically below the Parks Highway, so there's no visual contact possible from the Parks Highway of the facility that we would be building on the east end there. The railroad would, of course, come up and cross the Parks Highway approximately where the Stampede Road goes out and then proceed up to an elevation of about 2,000 feet in the Stampede Valley and skirt the north side of that valley out to the crossing of Topot, where it would turn south-southwest and follow the west bank of the Topot up into the Myrtle Pass area. The Myrtle Pass area is about 3,000 feet, and from there you have an unprecedented and completely unrestricted view of the Alaska Range, including McKinley, before you drop down into the headwaters of Moose Creek. All of this, again, like I said, is outside the wilderness area. The Healy area in particular has very good access from two different roads, the main road into Healy and a road that we would propose to build alongside the right-of-way down to the rail junction.
Thank you.
Any more questions for Mr. Fields? No, thank you, Mr. Fields.
Thank you.
We have anybody else in the audience to testify? Anyone else on teleconference? If not, close the testimony. What's the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move SJR number 25 with individual recommendations.
Any objection to this? If not, so ordered.
Thank you, Chair.
With a zero physical note?
Yeah. Zero physical note.
Next, we'll take up House Bill 210, Airport Duty-Free Concessions. Do we have a sponsor here today?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Oh. It's always a treat. Mr. Chairman, I'm Representative Norman Rookberg from District 11 in Anchorage, which includes the Anchorage International Airport. Is in large part in my district. And, Mr. Chairman, that's why I'm here today before your committee, and it's always a treat to be here. The House Bill 210 is a relatively simple bill, Mr. Chairman, that would give the authority to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to grant a lease extension to an existing leasehold or a leasehold in the future for areas which are for the sale and delivery of inbound merchandise. And in large part, what this specifically means, but not excluding other particular inbound merchandise, is the duty-free shop at the Anchorage International Airport. Mr. Chairman, in the heyday of international air traffic, as much as in excess of $100 million in gross revenues were produced by the duty-free shop in Anchorage at the International Terminal, with annual receipts back to the state of in excess of $19 million. Because of the change in the air traffic worldwide, because of long-range jets and the opening of the Russian airspace, in large part, a period happened when Anchorage was skipped as far as the passenger refueling destinations and servicing destinations for international traffic between Europe and the Orient. However, Mr. Chairman, that that traffic is picking up again somewhat, and it's to the benefit of the state of Alaska to enhance the revenues of our international airport systems, Chairman, which include both Anchorage and Fairbanks, to do anything we can as a matter of state policy to enhance the revenue picture at the airport. And this bill is specifically intended to do that. Mr. Chairman, the existing concessionaires have been had difficulty in terms of expanding their merchandise base by having a premise which is suitable in the eyes of many merchandising manufacturers and companies to display their goods to these relatively sophisticated Asian and European travelers that come through our airport. And it is necessary for the concessionaire to make substantial leasehold improvements to the premises in the International Terminal in Anchorage in order to be allowed to merchandise some of this world-class merchandise. And as a result, Mr. Chairman, they're asking for an extension of their lease in this concession to enable them to amortize the cost of several millions of dollars worth of improvements that need to be made to the premises so they can invite these merchandisers in to display their goods and sell these goods to the people traveling through the state of Alaska, and thereby, Mr. Chairman, increasing the revenues to the state. Matter of fact, it's rather ironic right now, Mr. Chairman, that we have to really compete with places like Hong Kong, New York City, Seoul, and Tokyo would have duty-free shops, of which are very large in scope and have a broad array of merchandise. We are in the middle of the flight patterns. And if these particular travelers are aware that these duty-free shops are available elsewhere, they can have the option of either picking up their merchandise in the Orient or in New York, which may well be on their itinerary, and skip spending any monies in the Anchorage International Airport. And that would be a shame, Mr. Chairman, because we are losing revenues as a result of that. So this is a simple bill in that regard, and it's intended to enhance the revenue to the state and the economic development of, I would point out, an Alaskan-owned business, Mr. Chairman. The present concessionaire, the David Green Group, is the first and only group of Alaskans who have had the courage to come forward and take the entrepreneurial risk to provide this service in the state of Alaska. We will be hearing testimony from the people that are involved with this. I would just point out to the committee, Mr. Chairman, that this is a matter of legislative policy making, and I think it's very critical that the best interests of the state are served by the passage of this bill and the concomitant extension of the lease in Anchorage so these gentlemen can conduct their business in a very profitable and mutually beneficial manner. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be available for any questions.
Are there any questions for the sponsor, Representative Elton? Before we get started, we had two representatives that came in and left a couple of times during the meetings. Representative Cowdery and Representative Masick have been here off and on.
And they come back.
And thank you. And Representative Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm sometimes here off and on, too, even though I'm present.
I won't say a word.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Rookberg, I tried to find in here what the existing practice is, and because I have assumed that when you contract for services of this sort, you generally contract for example, for 5 years and with the possibility of 3 1-year extensions or 3 2-year extensions. What has been the practice in this field? I can't find what the typical practice may be.
It's to the best of my knowledge, this particular arrangement was for 4 years and 11 months. And one reason it was done was that there is in place a Federal Aviation Agency regulation, which mandates certain activities at international airports to 5-year limitations. But it's my understanding that is because the federal government wishes to have economic opportunity or consideration of minority participation in leasehold interests at these types of concessions. I would point out also that this particular group, this Alaskan group, does have substantial ownership by minority-owned people. So I think this is a very important thing. And it's quite common, Mr. Chairman, that waivers are granted rather routinely by the FAA if this is the case. So I think we'll hear further testimony on this point. As a matter of fact, I would further say that in the realm of normal commercial real estate practices, the establishment of a renewal options and options to extend are very common and customary, although it depends on market conditions whether they occur or not, because there is a right, obviously, and a power granted to the tenant if a renewal option is granted as part of a leasehold interest and the provisions thereof. However, in the commercial world, there is absolutely no restrictions on the ability of a lessee and lessor to come together and bargain for an extension if it's in their mutual interest. And Mr. Chairman, that's why I submit this set of facts and this fact pattern is, and I think even it's very constitutionally defendable if it's in the best interest of the state to raise their revenues and their income. And that's what this bill is all about.
Any other questions for the sponsor? If not, you're free to sit here.
Thank you, Michelle.
Does the department care to comment?
For the record, my name is Sam Keto III, Special Assistant to Commissioner Perkins of Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. We have submitted a zero fiscal note for this piece of legislation. Our current position is neither in favor nor opposed to this piece of legislation, one way or the other. One point of clarification I would like to make, and Department of Law might be able to clarify a little further on this, is it was my understanding that this legislation is not retroactive, that it only applies to future contracts entered into by the department with the future duty-free concessionaire. With that, I'd like to entertain any questions I might be able to answer, or actually defer to Department of Law for any comments they may have. I believe they're on teleconference.
Any questions for the department? Representative Rookberg.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Ms. Keto, is your opinion as to the prospectivity of this particular legislation based on legal opinion, and you want to defer that discussion to the legal staff?
I'd prefer to defer that to the Department of Law.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next we'll go to teleconference in Anchorage. We have a Rick Benedetti.
This is Lynn Plaster, the general manager of the Data Green Group.
Okay.
Rick Benedetti, who's our managing partner, is also here with me.
Do both of you want to testify?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Okay, Lynn.
Thank you, Chairman. And members of the committee, we thank you for the opportunity to make testimony today. And I want to thank our sponsor, Representative Roper, for really describing it very, very well as far as the background on the concession here and what the purpose is of this bill. I think he did a very excellent job in describing it to the point where it leaves me very little to really to add to that, but I will make the following comment. In our Alaska location, you know, really competes for a market share with many Asian airports in Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Korea, as Representative Roper talked about, and continues to increase really by the each year in China also, where other airports are coming online for airlines who are routing through Anchorage as a technical, not technical stop, but a fueling stop here on their way into North America via New York or Toronto. And we also compete with airlines for in-flight sales service too, to capture those customer services. We have taken over the concession here in August of 1995, and up until that time, that concession, as was pointed out, was doing $100 million a year in 1988, dropped in 5 years by 93% down to almost less than $7 million a year in revenues for the operator, and considerably the revenues to the airport also dropped substantially as well during that time. Since our takeover here, we had to look at what are the big changes that took place here. In the past, this airport was predominantly shopped by a Japanese customer, and now pulled those flights out of here by themselves, going through a shorter air route to Russia. And what we're left with here are basic customer who are Korean and Chinese based. We've spent a lot of time and effort in trying to find out the needs of these customers. It's taken us almost 2 years to do that through a substantial investment of probably close to about $1.5 million so far by the owners of this company. We have finally found our niche, and what we're trying to employ the airport here to do is to work with us also to improve the facility. It has deteriorated over the years since the payday. We are willing to spend substantial dollars to bring it back up to the standards in today's duty-free environment to recapture market share, which we are doing, and we want to continue in that direction. But without the time left to amortize the cost of the substantial renovations, we find ourselves kind of between a rock and a hard place here, whether to do or not do it. But as the general manager, I represent the interests of our partners here, and obviously when we're going to invest this type of money, we need a longer amortization period, you know, to get that investment back to our owners. And I should also mention, too, that besides the investments that I've mentioned here also, we've also increased the employment. We've gone from about 25 employees who were there at the time of the takeover of the contract. We literally had to rehire all new people. We now have over 80 employees at this time, and the chances are that we'll probably continue to employ additional people as the concession grows here. But the growth won't come unless investments go into it. Like any good business and everything, you've got to spend the time, the efforts, and the capital improvements there to enhance the asset here. If I could draw an analogy, if a person owned a house and was renting it out to a tenant and everything, and that tenant came to them and wanted to make a substantial increase in improvements in the facility for longer term and everything, would that landlord grant that? I think in most cases we'd probably say it probably would. Knowing that the tenant was going to leave and those improvements would stay with this asset. That's what we have here with the Anchorage International Airport due to pre-concession too. This asset is owned by the state of Alaska and Anchorage International Airport. All we're asking to do is to work with us to improve that. We're not looking for substantially long extension on our contract there. They just want that meets the needs for the capital improvement. And so all of us can benefit by the results of that.
3 minutes.
And I will turn that testimony back over to Rick Benedetti. Unless there's questions first, please.
There's no questions right now at this time.
Yeah.
For the interest of time, we'd like to keep I would like for you to keep your comments short, please. There's another committee meeting held in this room in another 10 minutes. So if you could keep your comments short. Mr. Benedetti.
Well, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I will keep my comments extremely brief. We would hope that the committee would see that the interest of this contract extension should apply to our existing contract, just given the competitive nature of our business as been described by the earlier speakers. The competitive nature of the of our business moves forward quickly. We believe that if we have to wait before we make this investment, then the opportunity might pass us up. So it's very important for us in partnership with the state to move forward in that respect. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Representative Roepberg has questions.
Just one question. Could either of you two gentlemen describe the transition situation where you were invited in there and it almost recruited by the state to take over that operation? Could you speak to that?
Well, I wouldn't call it being invited. We were, Mr. Benedict and myself, did prepare the business plan trying to qualify ourselves and to find investors to work with us. In both our cases here, we were employed by the former operator, which was Duty Free Shoppers. Both of us have had at least a 12-year plus employment history in that industry with that company. We got invited in. We qualified ourselves based on the bid specification. This is after the state had put it out for bid on four previous occasions. We did qualify on the fourth go around.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
No question. You ready for motion?
I have a Ross Copper Fund and Elizabeth Pickerson from the AG's office.
Ross Copperwood is an assistant attorney general with well over 20 years experience dealing with competitive bids. I know you're short on time, so I will be very quick. We have concerns about this bill if it is intended to apply to the existing contract, thus be retroactive. It's an exclusive contract that was let through a competitive situation. There were two other bidders that did bid on this contract. The airport regulations require that the terms and conditions of all competitive bids be publicly noticed. This one was. The invitation to bid provided that the contract terms were not negotiable, made it very clear on that issue. There was a major section on disclaimers, and we did not warrant any sort of guarantee regarding increases or decreases in the flow of customer traffic. At a minimum, let me say that litigation is quite likely if there is an attempt to extend the existing contract. This is not based on speculation, but on history. The last bid was, in fact, litigated went up to the Supreme Court a couple of times. Today, there are six interested parties, including the existing concessionaire, that have requested already packets of information regarding the offering that will not be made until the year 2000. So the interest is there. The marketplace is watching. I must put on the table that there are some legal concerns, particularly if this is applied to this one contract. This would also be perhaps a special legislation, a special act that would only apply to the David Green Group contract. There are other issues concerning competitive principles. This would probably be considered a material modification of a contract, because the length of a contract competitively offered is an essential element, and to change it after award could be found to amount to a new contract. So I know you get tired of hearing attorneys say no, 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 but what we are saying today is please be very cautious, because to apply it retroactively, to apply it to the existing contract, basically breaks the promise that the state made in 95 when we offered the duty-free concessionaire to the public, and they bid on it, and we awarded it to the David Green Group on terms that were specifically non-negotiable.
Representative Roeperg, or Representative Elf.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just very quickly, Ms. Hickerson, I'm looking at the statute, and the subsection D provides that when something goes out for competitive bid in the future, that the character and improvements of the proposed facilities can be one of the things that you score on. Would that apply to improvements that were made by the old leaseholder who was bidding again also, or is that just prospective improvements that any leaseholder would plan on making?
We could structure the bid based on future improvements. I might just add that the David Green Group did take existing fixtures that were left by the previous concessionaire, and there is always that to deal with in a terminal-type contract. Frequently, they are written in such a way that you cannot remove a fixture if it's going to do damage to the building. But that's kind of a condition. But as far as building into what will be considered in the bid, certainly you can consider future development. And we have even gone to the FAA and gotten waivers when we have been advised of the fact that significant capital investment will be necessary. That was never raised in this bid.
One more question, if I could, Mr. Chair. The provision in the proposed legislation provides that if the department determines that the extension is in the best interest of the state, I mean, it would seem to me that would give the Department of Law the ability to say that any extension of the existing contract may be questionable, and that the department could deny an extension based on advice from the Department of Law that your concerns with the retroactivity or the application of this to the existing leaseholder. Do you see this legislation as giving you that latitude?
I see an extension after bid is awarded competitively to be inconsistent with the principles of competitive bidding. And so even though the Department of Law might advise the department that there are substantial reasons not to grant an extension in consistency with the principles of competition, I assume that it is there, then it becomes one of those issues of, is this necessary?
Okay, thanks, Ms. Hickerson.
Representative Roeperg.
Mrs. Hickerson, in light of the North Star activities in the prior 19th legislature, isn't it the right of the legislature to set the policy of the state and for example, in this bill, give the department the latitude in which they can renegotiate an existing lease or concession?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Roper. We have looked at the North Star lease, certainly, and we have been concerned about the position that the state is taking there in light of other leases. There are many, many differences between that lease and what we have here. What we have here is a very short-term concession contract that is based on a percentage of revenue, very different from development of state resources. Also in North Star, I think you're dealing with a contract that was 20 years, actually an unending limit after a certain period of time versus a very specific limitation as to the length. So number one, I think you're looking at, they're not the same type of critter.
Just one more question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roper.
Would this bill give the authority to the department to renegotiate the existing lease? That's the intention of the bill.
Sorry.
We're okay down here.
Is that a question for me?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I think by the wording, it would give the state the ability to extend, to provide an extension in a duty-free contract. As it is drafted right now, this does not contain a retrospective section. And so I would, number one, say it would need to address that issue. Number two, certainly we can provide for extensions in new bid packets, such as a 3-year term, 5-year term with options for extension. It would provide that prospectively. Legislation, as you all well know, is traditionally prospective only versus retroactive. As far as does it change the legal problems that I previously outlined? I don't think so.
Any other questions? If not, thank you. Is there any discussion on this?
Is it public hearing closed?
Is there any more, anyone here that would like to testify? Please come state your name for the record.
For the record, my name is Ashley Reed. I'm currently a lobbyist for the David Green Group, and previously I served as a lobbyist for the Duty Free Shoppers Limited, which had the concession since around the early 1980s up until most recently. I find it somewhat ironic that the state is really tickled that they have 6 people that are interested in the upcoming bid package. Last time they had 23 people, I believe, and they couldn't get anybody to bid on it for the first 2 times it went out to bid. Finally, the 3rd time it went out to bid, there were bidders. And I guess the other thing that I find ironic is that here's an opportunity. The state had a very valuable asset at one time, and that asset at one time produced approximately $19 million a year in revenue to the state. Now retail sales don't even approach $19 million. I think that what Representative Roekberg is offering in this legislation is a very valuable tool, and a tool of economic development, whereby if it's in the state's interest, it doesn't say that, you know, if you pass this legislation, it's going to require the state to do anything. It just gives the airport a tool to stay competitive. And at the time you're letting these leases, as Ms. Hickerson talked about, you could write in options for 3 years or 5 years. This is such a rapidly changing worldwide business that I don't think that anyone has that type of perspective to really be able to decide today what might or should happen out into the future. The David Green Group feels that if they are allowed to make this type of investment and is given the opportunity to make their case to the state, that the state will find it to be in their best interest. Right now, we have surpassed the minimum payments required, and we're paying on a percentage. Every dollar more of revenue that is brought through the doors at the Anchorage International Airport by the David Green Group, the state will get a bigger and larger share of. It's an opportunity as well to build a state asset. That concession is a state asset, and the value of that state asset is something that the legislature and the administration should be very concerned with. And I believe that by allowing for additional investment and increasing the sales of that operation, you're going to find that the next time it does go out to bid, that you will have a lot more interested parties bidding. I know my former client, Duty Free Shoppers Limited, isn't even looking at Anchorage, Alaska, because it doesn't meet their revenue threshold. The big companies aren't interested in bidding or living in Anchorage, Alaska anymore because it doesn't hit their revenue threshold. But if we can increase revenues and increase the active participation of the bid process, ultimately that will be in the best interest of the state's revenue. I think it's a very valuable tool that for the state to have. Other lawyers that I've talked to have considerably different opinions about whether we can do this. Some argue that we don't need this legislation to go ahead and move forward at this point. And so what they tell me is that if it gives DOT or some folks comfortable, this is a good tool. And whether it's whether you look at it retroactively or prospectively, I think it's an important tool for the state to have in their arsenal of economic development tools.
Representative Roper.
Representative Williams, Mr. Chairman, I respectfully disagree with the opinion of Ms. Hickerson, and I might say in the words of Yogi Berra, this is deja vu all over again as when it comes to the airport leasing regulations. So I ask this committee to take this bill up and move it along.
Representative Kukesh.
I'm not really, I haven't been around, so I don't know what the deja vu would be, but I'm just looking at this bill from a first-time person looking at it. I, if it had said, for example, that this is a bill and the department shall extend the contract for the David Green Group, I probably would be pretty uncomfortable with it. But just looking at it, it says the department may, it says the department has to determine something, and it also said that it has to be in the best interest of the state. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't know what the attorney for the state's looking for, but I think she's looking into this a little bit more than she should. I think it's a tool. I don't have a dog in this fight, but I think I appreciate it, and I'd like to move it to move the bill with individual recommendations to the next committee referral, if there is a next committee referral.
You've heard the motion. Is any objection to that? Move the bill out with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note, attached fiscal note. Any objections? If not, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Nothing more to come before this committee. This committee stands adjourned at 3:15 p.m.
You guys sure.